Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Live journeys into mind, heart, and soul. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, inviting you to come on the journey, join in the quest. Spirit Talk Live is our monthly forum for exploring the great questions of existence, for joining in the quest to find meaning and worth in life through intellectual inquiry and sacred spirit. It is a worldwide conversation for spiritual seekers and rational empiricists, for people of all religions and of no religion, of all faiths, and of no faith, because here on Spirit Talk Live, nothing is sacred and everything is sacred. Well, welcome, welcome, welcome to this month's edition of Spirit Talk Live. Thank you for being with us. I'm very glad that you have come, because we have a wonderful, wonderful guest and a wonderful program for you today. And before we begin with our guest, let me remind you, please, of my latest book, Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People, published by Monkfish Publishing. It is a compelling appraisal of the state of our present-day world and a bold, visionary, spirit-filled blueprint for its transformation and evolution through radical loving and awesome holiness, a call to oneness, a promise that Earth can be Eden once again. It's an important book to read, and actually it's even more important than when I wrote it a few years ago, because the way the world is unfolding right now, we need each other. We need compassion and love and not hatred and fear and power grabs. And so take a look at it. It's available on Amazon and other booksellers. You can find out more about the book at the website www.radicallovingbook.com. Radical Loving, One God, One World, One People, published by Monkfish. So today, I get to introduce you to one of my oldest friends. And when I say oldest friends, I mean not old in age, but old in our relationship, because I tried to figure it out today. We know each other for almost 58 years. That's a long time in a lifetime. My guest is Rabbi Roberto Gretz, with whom I went to undergraduate and rabbinical school. Rabbi Gretz is a native of Argentina, and we're going to find out why his family was there to begin with. Came to Cincinnati for undergraduate and rabbinical school, and then returned to Argentina to serve his childhood congregation, community, and later went to Rio and to Lafayette, California. And in his retirement, he and his wife have volunteered in Puerto Rico to help the hurricane victims. His career has been marked by bravery and resilience in the face of political oppression and opposition, and his deep love for God, Judaism, and his people, his congregants. So it is a great, great pleasure for me to welcome to Spirit Talk Live from his house and offices in Lafayette, California, my dear friend, El Rabino Roberto Gretz, Rabbi Roberto Gretz. Rabbi Gretz, welcome.
Hi. Thank you. My mother would have loved that introduction.
And your father wouldn't have believed it.
And my father would never have believed it. But you met them both at my ordination, I believe.
Remember? I did. Absolutely.
1972.
Absolutely.
Yep.
You were in 72. I was 73. That's right.
Yeah.
So let's begin where we need to begin, which is, what was your family doing in Argentina?
So I like to say, after many, many years, that my parents were accidental Argentinians, that it was a transition generation. They both left Germany as adolescents. In fact, they didn't know each other. My father left Germany in 1933. My mother's family left Germany. They were both from Berlin. My mother's family left Berlin in 33 and they went to Prague in Czechoslovakia. And then in 39, my grandfather decided that Prague wouldn't be far enough and emigrated with his family to Argentina. So my parents were both refugees. They both left just before the Holocaust, and they met in Argentina.
And why did they choose Argentina rather than the United States?
So in the case of my father, it's because there was an uncle that had moved to Argentina a generation before. It's a complicated family history. It seems that in my ancestry, there was always, in each generation, there was a black sheep of the family, and the black sheep of the family would be sent away from the family. So in my grandparents' generation, there was such a black sheep that was sent off to Argentina because it would never become anything in Germany. They were very sophisticated German bankers and blah, blah, blah. And then my father was the black sheep in his generation, and since they already had a relative in Argentina, they sent him to Argentina. I do need to add that as it got closer to the war, my grandparents, my paternal grandparents, had to emigrate in a hurry, and they ended up in Argentina for a few years before ultimately moving to Philadelphia in the United States.
Right, so you now had grandparents both in Argentina and in the United States.
Well, I beg your pardon?
You had grandparents both in Argentina and the United States.
Yeah, my maternal grandfather I didn't meet because he passed away before I was born. But my father's parents I knew well from when I was a young child in Argentina, and then from frequently visiting them while I was a student at the Hebrew Union College in Cincinnati.
I remember you were a very devoted grandson. You called them every Sunday night, and you spoke to them in German, right?
Correct. They helped me keep up my German. But even though they were fluent in English, but we did communicate in German.
So you are fluent in Portuguese, Spanish, German, Hebrew, English?
That's about it.
All of those things.
Yeah. Right. And so there is a funny story about my grandfather's migration from Germany to Argentina. My grandfather was a man of a certain wealth, and because he didn't trust my father and sent him to Argentina as a teenager, he had a bank account in Switzerland in case he needed to flee, and he had this bank account with a co-signer, a cousin of his, whom he trusted more than my father. And then when the time came to cross the border from Germany into Switzerland, he went to the bank, and all his money and his cousin were gone. So he only emigrated to Argentina with the money he had in his pocket when he left Germany. Now, the beautiful, silly thing is that when they arrived in Argentina, my father went to pick them up at the docks where the ship landed, and they took the tramway from the shipyard to where my father was living with his uncle, and on the tramway, my grandfather was pickpocketed, and the little money he had left was gone. So by the time he arrived to his brother's house in Buenos Aires, he had not a penny to his name.
And yet he grew up to be a successful businessman and raise you up to be a...
That's my grandfather. My father was never successful. My father was never a successful business person. My father suffered much through immigration. He caught typhus fever on the ship, and that had permanent consequences on his health for the rest of his life. He had a very weak immune system and suffered from all kinds of different things. And ultimately, he died of a heart attack at age 55.
So there you are in Argentina, young man. And how did you get interested in Jewish life enough to want to become a rabbi?
So my parents were co-founders of one of the many synagogues that German Jewish immigrants founded in Argentina, because they were not just synagogues, they were Landsmannschaften. There were groups of people who came from the same regional area. So there was the synagogue of the Berliners, there was the synagogue of the Mannheimers, there was the synagogue of every other, there were like six or seven German synagogues of German Jewish, German origin. My father helped found one of them in the suburbs of Buenos Aires where we lived. And I was involved in that synagogue all my life since early childhood. I saw it built. And the interesting thing about the synagogue, I always mention, is its name. The founders of the synagogue called it Lamrot Hakol. Lamrot Hakol in Hebrew means in spite of everything. So these German Jews who survived the Holocaust, either by fleeing early or coming right after the war, they founded a synagogue in spite of everything that happened to them. They still wanted to be in community and worship together and lead their cultural lives together. It was an interesting synagogue. While growing up, the rabbi preached in German until the mid-1950s. The rabbi still continued to preach in German. And the first two rabbis of that synagogue, which were the rabbis under whom I grew up, were not really rabbis, were rabbinic students who fled in the midst of their rabbinic studies and were never formally ordained. And nonetheless, they were both powerful personalities that influenced me a lot. The second one, Paul Hirsch, of blessed memory, was a great youth leader and started camping for Jewish kids in Argentina. And I was part of that growing up, and eventually I was a counselor at the camps and so on. So that's where my interest came. In my house, we celebrated the Shabbat on the Jewish holidays. We were not a kosher home. It was not a traditional household. It was certainly not Orthodox. It was in the German liberal tradition.
So you are not exactly a child of survivors, but you are a child of the German-Jewish experience. We know many people who are direct children of survivors of the camps and of fleeing, but how did that German-Jewish experience and the war coming and the concentration camps coming and Hitler coming, how did that affect your growing up?
Well, I was born in 1946, so the war was over by then, but I have no memories of the war. My earliest memory is my father telling me, and I was a baby, I was 2 years old, and my father was very happy and went to dance in the streets of Buenos Aires with part of the Jewish community when the State of Israel came to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of my earliest memory. Now, on the other hand, I do have to say that those who fled Germany and Europe in the late 30s, even though they were not literally Holocaust survivors in that they were in the camps or that they survived the war in Europe, considered themselves survivors. And they were all traumatized by the immigration in the same way as other people were traumatized by migration. But they were traumatized by immigration. They had guilt complexes because they fled and relatives stayed behind. And so they were very much counted as survivors. They were all traumatized, and they survived the trauma of the Holocaust.
And so, in that milieu, you grow up, and I'm asked all the time, so I will ask you, how and when did you decide you wanted to be a rabbi?
Well, there is a funny answer to that, and then there may be a more serious answer. The funny answer is I always wanted to be an orchestra conductor. And I was very involved in music growing up. I various instruments and composition and conducting and choir participation. I did a lot. My second love was music. But I was also involved always in the synagogue life, in the religious school, and then in the youth group, and so on and so forth. And one day my father looked at me straight in the face and said, look, if you want to be an orchestra conductor, and we're now speaking about the late 50s, if you want to be an orchestra conductor, you better plan on being among the 10 best in the world, because the rest stars. And I said, okay, that's not for me. I'm not that ambitious. So I'll become a rabbi instead. But the decision to become a rabbi is a long decision. I have to share that I wanted to be a rabbi when I became bar mitzvah. And when I was 14 years old, still wearing short pants, I heard of a famous Reform rabbi coming to visit Argentina on behalf of the World Zionist Organization. He was a big Zionist, Rabbi Ezra Spicehandler. Mm-hmm. Remember Spicy?
Sure.
Spicehandler came to Argentina, and I asked very formally for an appointment to see him, to talk to him about going to HUC, to the Hebrew Union College. And he received me in the hotel where he was staying, and we had a very lovely conversation. And at the end of the conversation, he said to me, when you start wearing long pants, let's talk again about this.
Sounds like Ezra, right?
So we did talk again about it later, and that followed my decision. I just loved everything involved in the rabbinate. The rabbinate combined all the things that I love to do, that I was learning, teaching, counseling, being with people, being in a community, being a bit of a ham, which I was. The pulpit gave me that exposure and so on and so forth. And since early days, my passion, and that my father was instrumental in imbuing that in me, in social justice and political involvement.
You know, I could have answered in exactly the same way. That's why we became rabbis in that generation.
Yeah.
So you chose the Hebrew Union College as opposed to your other choice in that time was the Jewish Theological Seminary, the Conservative Seminary. Why did you choose HUC?
I had three choices. And the third choice was Rabbi Marshall Meyer of Blessed Memory had just started the seminario in Buenos Aires, mm-hmm. a rabbinical training institute for the Spanish-speaking, particularly Argentina was his interest, for the Spanish-speaking world. And Marshall was very interested in me becoming one of his early students. But I had these opportunities to come either to the Jewish Theological Seminary or the Hebrew Union College. And I looked at his seminary, and it was like the Hebrew Union College when Isaac Meir Weiss started it. It was all done out of his office, and the library of the college was in his office. And the professors of the college were Rabbi Marshall Meyer. And I said, no, that's not for me. I have an opportunity to study in serious institutions. So I decided to go to JTS, much to the regret of my grandfather, who was by then living in Philadelphia and an active member of a Reformed Jewish community and wanted me to go to HUC. But I decided to go to JTS and went through the process of enrolling at JTS. And when I finally was accepted, I received a letter from the chancellor of the seminary, asking me to sign a document in which I would commit to keeping kashrut, the dietary laws in Judaism, to putting on tefillin, the phylacteries every day, and to observing strictly Shabbat. And when I read this letter, I answered him, Dr. Finkelstein, this is not between me and you, this is between me and God. I'm not signing this letter, I'm going to HUC.
Well, the exact same thing happened to me, and I went back to my rabbi, a conservative rabbi in Chicago, a very prominent rabbi, and I said to him, this is not the conservative Judaism that you brought us up in. And he said to me, Wayne, you'll be a very fine rabbi. Have you ever heard of the Hebrew Union College?
So that made my grandfather very happy.
Uh-huh. Now, you do something that was somewhat rare in those days. You come not just to rabbinical school, but you come to undergraduate school at the University of Cincinnati, and you are given a major scholarship to come. So when we return after these messages, we will ask Rabbi Roberto Gretz how he came to choose to come to the United States for undergraduate school, and how he was chosen for this prestigious scholarship. This is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick with my distinguished friend and longtime colleague and really a great, great lifetime friend, Rabbi Roberto Gretz. We'll be back after these messages, as always, inviting you to come on the journey. Join in the quest.
Sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
Save the Animals Today offers a respectable retirement and end-of-life experience for all the horses that have been abandoned as they age. Not a day goes by that people don't call Save the Animals Today looking for a place for their horses. Patty and the folks at Save the Animals Today do their best to bring as many horses as they possibly can to beautiful Dudette Ranch to love them and care for them. Dudette Ranch is a special place. Horses and other farm animals enjoy the peaceful sanctuary of the lovely hills north of San Diego. Volunteers of all ages come to interact with and take care of these wonderful creatures. Older folks who had horses when they were growing up and now have some free time especially enjoy helping around the barn with animals who want the extra attention. Save the Animals Today would like to provide shelter for every farm animal who needs rescue. Right now, there's a waiting list. Dudette Ranch needs your help. The horses need your help. You can help these magnificent animals by making a tax-deductible donation to Save the Animals Today. $25 will make a difference, and $25 a month will mean another older horse will enjoy its older years, loved and cared for. If you want to help even more, visit the website at www.savetheanimalstoday.org.
Music, information, and friends. HealthyLife.net.
We're back. It's Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, along with my great friend, Rabbi Roberto Gretz, who is going to tell us how he came to Cincinnati for undergraduate school to the University of Cincinnati, both our alma maters. But it had to do, I believe, Rabbi Gretz, with what was going on politically with anti-Semitism in Argentina, where you were living. Rabbi Gretz.
Yes, so that's a good question. So my father was not politically involved and never very successful. We lived in a very working-class neighborhood, and I grew up under the Perón dictatorship during the first Perón era. And when Eva Perón died, I came back from school, and Eva Perón was a figure in our school, the first page of every textbook that we had was her picture with a saying about the kids being the only privileged ones under the Peronist regime. And when she died, I got home, and I was crying. And my father asked me, why are you crying? And I said, because Eva Perón died. So my father, who never put a hand on me, slapped me in the face and said, now you have a reason to cry. Because he didn't like the Perón regime. Hmm. Then in 1960, and my father, when the revolution came and Perón fell out of the government and the military took over, that was the first military regime I remember. Even Perón was a military man himself. My father put the Argentinian flag out, celebrating the revolution. And the next morning, our house was painted in the outdoors with the Judenrausch and Jews leave and so on and so forth, anti-Semitic things from this very popular neighborhood where most people were pro-Peron. Then in 1960, Adolf Eichmann was kidnapped from Argentina and taken to Israel. And that gave a rise, that allowed the latent anti-Semitism in Argentina to arise, to come to the fore. It gave it permission. And there was a great wave of anti-Semitism in Argentina with bombings and kidnappings of Jewish students. I remember I was a very active student already by then in the beginning of high school, and I would go to school with an iron rod under my pants to defend myself if I would be attacked. And we stood guard at our synagogue. There was always an adult, an armed adult, and then there were members of the youth group that were attentive during the nights at the synagogue, so in case somebody would come and try to firebomb, we could defend the synagogue. So that was sort of my growing up, the beginning of my adolescent years, and I became very involved politically. I was involved in school politics. I became the president of the student body.
Of course.
And when it came time to go to the university, we were in the middle of a military regime with a lot of repression of students and a lot of political turmoil in the university. And my mother, who would have been the last person to want to see me go away for my studies, was happy to see me go because she said, if my son goes to the university, he's not going to survive it, because I was going to be politically involved in the university and eventually get killed by somebody on the other side. And so my decision to go to the undergraduate program at HUC had to do with the political situation in Argentina at the time and the opportunity that had been offered to me to study at the Hebrew Union College. The question of the scholarship is more complicated than that. I had a letter from the school saying that I had a scholarship, and when I actually arrived in the States, the scholarship didn't materialize, and the only way I could do it was to take student loans for my housing in Cincinnati. And my grandparents' rabbi in Philadelphia was gracious and generous enough to arrange a scholarship from some donors that he knew, that were individual donors that decided to bank my first 4 years, my undergraduate studies. Then when I went to the graduate school at the Hebrew Union College, I was on a full scholarship.
And so you came there in this, what was in those days, the joint program between HUC and the University of Cincinnati. And as I recall, I came as a sophomore. You came as a freshman. I came as an undergraduate sophomore, and I was a year behind you. But as I recall, the people who were in the dorms and in that program, every one of them became a very successful rabbi. It was a great program. I'm sorry HUC doesn't have it anymore. They've replaced it with other things. But it was a great program. And the great joy of being in the same class as the first American woman rabbi, Rabbi Sally J. Priesan. Tell us a little bit about going to both undergraduate school and the rabbinical school with Rabbi Priesan.
So, the story went in Cincinnati at the time that any woman who applied to the Hebrew Union College, who was going to the University of Cincinnati and applied to the Hebrew Union College, is because their parents wanted her to marry a rabbi.
And many did.
And then she did. In fact, there were a couple of other female students that started the undergraduate program with us, and two of them ended up marrying rabbis. Sally Priesan was the outlier. Sally Priesan wanted to be a rabbi. And we studied together for 8 years. We were colleagues and classmates and friends. During the 8 years that we studied together in Cincinnati, and we knew when certain professors who were going to be in the elevator with her, one of us needed to walk into the elevator with her so that the professor would not be obnoxious.
Yes, they were.
And obnoxious is a very nice term to use.
They were pretty abusive to us, and to how much the more so to her.
Yeah, For us, it was different times. So today they couldn't get away with it, but in our time it was normal pattern. But the treatment of women was a different thing because they were not accustomed to having women in the program.
Right. And so we walked down Clifton Avenue from HUC to UC, and what did you major in? What was your undergraduate studies?
Well, first of all, I have to tell you that my landing at HUC at the beginning of the school year in 1964, most of the English I learned during that previous summer. I arrived in the States before the summer, and I was sent around to summer camps by NIFTY, and I was forced to speak English, and I did pick up quite a bit of it. But I certainly was not prepared to go to start university studies on the first day. I arrived in Cincinnati, went to the Hebrew Union College dorm, and a very tall African-American man who was one of the waiters and staff people in the school, William, comes to greet me. Very, very friendly guy, and he greets me, and he talks to me. And I swear to you, I can't understand a word this man is saying. And I say, I can't understand this man. How can I go to the university? My dear friend and your friend, Ralph Mecklenburger, comes into my room and becomes my mitergamon, becomes my translator. He interprets what William is saying to me. William has such a thick southern accent that I couldn't pick it up.
And so when we come back, we'll find out how this Spanish-speaking English-speaking novice, goes to undergraduate school and succeeds brilliantly at the University of Cincinnati, and at the same time goes to rabbinical school. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick, along with Rabbi Roberto Gretz. This is Spirit Talk Live. We'll be back after these messages, as always, inviting you to come on the journey, join in the quest.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
In 1972, Sur La Table opened in Seattle, selling hard-to-find kitchen items, and now they have 55 stores nationwide, offering kitchen tools from around the world to prepare any cuisine. Sur La Table has a full range of houseware and kitchen products, even books and food. Visit a Sur La Table store, or better yet, for faster service, go to the HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Sur La Table. With the best products, gift cards, and sale items, you can be on your way to being a first-class cook right now.
Do you wonder what is happening in our world? Do you wonder what the forces of the universe are doing to us? Is your life affected by the ebb and flow of events over which you seem to have little control? The answers to these questions and more can be found in the internet publication Cosmic Times, Spiritual News You Can Use, a bi-monthly channel transmission from Ellen Kaufman Dossick. Since 1994, the Cosmic Times has offered detailed information about what is happening energetically in our cosmos and how we can best support the emerging consciousness within ourselves and our world. Many people feel like the Cosmic Times keeps them sane in a seemingly crazy world, lifts their vibrations, and supports their continuing growth and expansion. You can subscribe to the Cosmic Times by going to the website www.soulmemorydiscovery.com. Join the thousands who benefit from the wisdom and insights in the Cosmic Times and receive spiritual news you can use. www.soulmemorydiscovery.com.
Information, entertainment, worldwide. HealthyLife.net.
We're back. It's Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Dossick, and this is with Rabbi Gretz. So we're talking about his going to undergraduate school at the University of Cincinnati, while his English was not so good yet. And so, how'd you do it?
So, my first semester at the University of Cincinnati and the Hebrew Union College was complicated. You remember at those times we wrote papers? little papers for classes that we have to have ready and present. And the first semester, Ralph Mecklenburger, my friend, wrote most of my papers. I have to admit it so many years later. Nobody's going to take my title away. Until I was firm enough in my English that I could do it myself. But it took a full semester. And it was through Ralph that I survived that first semester. You remember we had the undergraduate classes at the Hebrew Union College were always very early in the morning because we then had to go off to school to the university to take our regular classes there. So we got up very early and we had our first classes. Our teachers were mostly graduate students in the rabbinical program. They were our Hebrew teachers, our history teachers. But on one occasion, I think I was in my sophomore year, we had a Hebrew professor who was one of the real professors at HUC, Dr. Yerushalmi of blessed memory, who didn't have a lot of patience for my not understanding the basic rules of Hebrew grammar. And when I declined a verb incorrectly at, I think it was at 7:15 in the morning, or it may have been 7:45, he threw a chair at me, indicating his annoyance.
That doesn't sound like Yerushalmi. He was a fairly gentle man.
Not at 7:45 in the morning, right. He was.
Not my best time of day, either.
Right. So that was the beginning of my university studies. At the end, in 1968, when I was ready to graduate, the university discovered that I was missing one credit in physical education.
Right.
And I thought they wouldn't catch it, but they caught it. And I was in a bind because I needed to graduate so that I could start the program at the Hebrew Union College the next year. I needed a graduation thing. And so after a long discussion, they allowed me to write a paper on the subject of golf. All I knew about golf at that stage is that I played with my friend Wayne Dossig in Chicago. 9 holes in some little course that you took me to. And I played that once and never again. And I wrote a paper on golf. And that got me the credit that I was missing and I was able to graduate. I have to say I think I might have helped with that one. I came back to golf and it's one of my big loves.
Yeah, what? I think I might have helped with that paper. It was a great pleasure to make sure you were graduated.
So that was it. Ralph at the beginning, you at the end. And I graduated from the University of Cincinnati. And the great advantage of the undergraduate program, if you remember, when we started, there was no such thing as a year in Israel for the students.
Right.
By the time we graduated, there was a full year requirement of Israel studies. We who went through the undergraduate program could skip that first year. And we did. So we had only 4 years of rabbinic education instead of 5. And we all took time off at some point in our studies to go to Israel and catch up on that year that we missed.
Right. I went for a full year, and you came halfway through that year.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So, rabbinical school. What was your love there? What was your subject love? What in the vastness of Jewish life and learning, what did you love?
I didn't love necessarily at the beginning subject matters as much as I loved some teachers more than others. And the teacher you love is the subject you love later in life.
Mm.
And the theology, midrash, text, delving into tradition was my thing, and I got it all from both your and my favorite teacher, Dr. Jacob Peruchowski of blessed memory, with whom I eventually wrote my rabbinic thesis.
As did I. What was your thesis?
My thesis for an obscure subject was the Richtlinien, the 1912 Richtlinien, historically and theologically considered. And what was important about that thesis, by the way, quoted in a footnote in the history of, in the response to modernity by Professor Michael Meyer, another
great professor and mentor of mine, was that it was the last platform of Reform Judaism in Germany ever written. That was 1912. And the whole difficulty of writing it, I'm writing my thesis in 1971-72, when the Reform movement is struggling with publishing a new platform for the Reform movement. Mm. And it seemed that it would never see the light of day, and eventually it saw it, and it was relevant, and it was like the last platform the Reform movement ever produced in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and very interestingly, the second half of my thesis title was Historically and Theologically Considered. Pat liked that, title.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Yes, he
so,
did.
During our student years, we have student pulpits, like internships. We leave from Cincinnati on weekends and go to these small congregations throughout the South and the Midwest to give student rabbi service to those who can't have or afford rabbis, and we get to practice. Where did you go? What did you do?
Oh, I had a couple of bi-weekly pulpits in the States, of which I have very little memory. One was in Joplin, Missouri, which was very nice. But I have very little. My greatest, my best rabbinic training came because in my second year, of rabbinic school, I got a call from a small Reform congregation in Guatemala City, in Guatemala, in Central America. And they had lost their permanent rabbi, and they couldn't afford at the time to bring a new full-time rabbi. So they were looking for somebody who could help them during particularly intense holiday seasons. So I ended up going to Guatemala for 3 years, three summers, that I went through the summer, our summer break, through the high holidays, I would say, in Guatemala. And then a couple of times I went for the week of Passover. And there I developed a wonderful relationship with this very small community, Temple Bethel, in Guatemala City, which no longer exists. But that was really where I broke my teeth in training in the rabbinate, because I was on my own for 8 weeks or 10 weeks, and I dealt with everything that had to do with the rabbinate. It was, again, a very political turbulent time in the history of Guatemala, with kidnaps for rent. The Jewish, members of the Jewish community were victims of these kidnappings, because they were a fairly wealthy community. And I have to counsel families in those situations. I have to counsel rescued people in those situations. So it was a very hard time, very complicated.
And when we come back, we'll find out what Rabbi Gretz does when he is finally ordained a rabbi. After these messages, this is Spirit Talk Live. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick with Rabbi.
Sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options, from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones, for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to Bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Rabbi Dr. Wayne Dossick is the award-winning author of 8 best-selling books. Living Judaism, The Complete Guide to Jewish Belief, Tradition, and Practice, is now a classic, used in synagogues, churches, seminaries, and universities throughout the country as the basic introduction to Judaism text, and in homes as the perfect one-volume reference to Jewish faith and observance. 20-Minute Kabbalah, co-written with his wife Ellen Kaufman Dossick, uses Tree of Life mysticism to offer a daily personal spiritual practice that brings you to God, your soul knowing, and your heart's desires. The accompanying audio CD, angelically sung by cantor Kathy Robbins, guides you through all the sweet and holy chants. These and other fine books by Rabbi Dossick, including When Life Hurts and Soul Judaism, are available at Amazon.com. For more information about Indigo Children, visit the website www.soulbysoul.com. And for more information about Kabbalah, visit the website www.20minutekabbalah.com. Let Wayne Dossick's books expand your knowledge and enrich your life.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
With Rabbi Roberto Gress, we're learning about a distinguished rabbinic career, and now he comes close to ordination. There was one special thing about your ordination. Ordination is always incredibly special, but because Rabbi Prisan was being ordained, the first woman in America ever, and probably the second woman in all of Jewish life, some very interesting things happened that day. Particularly with the news media and with your class. And what did your class do? I regret.
Well, so there is more interesting stuff that happened around my ordination. I have to repeat, I was always politically active in these institutions I participated. You have to remember, 1972, the campuses in the United States were roiled by the Vietnam War. There were protests and strikes and student protests, and we wanted the schools to be more involved in the politics of the time, and they met with resistance, both the faculty and administration. And it was the first time in the history of the school, I believe, that the president of the Hebrew Union College invited the class of 1972 to have one speaker respond to the speaker at ordination. And the class elected me to be the respondent. But I was very active in the protests against certain things that the school was doing, and the president of HUC was not very happy with me being the speaker and objected to it and required that I present my text to him before I delivered it on the day of ordination. And the class considered that censorship, and they wouldn't do that. And he said, no, it's not censorship. He's a foreigner. I want to make sure that his English is correct, which was ridiculous by that time. My English was as good as his. But my friend Ralph Mecklenburger stepped in once again and says, I'll review his English for you. And I gave the speech. So now to Rabbi, in which part of it is I acknowledge the ordination of the first woman rabbi in the United States, and the second, as you mentioned, in the history of Judaism, in our long, long history. And when Rabbi Prisan was invited to come up to receive the ordination, the whole class stood up and invited then the whole congregation, which was a very full Plum Street Temple, to rise up and welcome her into our ranks in a position of distinction and honor. It was a very emotional and moving moment. And of course, anything I would have said at that moment in my speech or whatever was quickly forgotten, because the central thing and the central moment of that very important ordination was the fact that a woman had become a rabbi.
Yes, we all wept. And mm-hmm. only some of the faculty did not stand, and they should be ashamed forever for that.
Yeah. They couldn't learn. They were too old. They couldn't change their ways.
So here you
they
are.
They stayed behind.
Here you are. The entire Jewish world is at your feet. You can go anywhere. You were by that time fairly well known in the United States, because you were this brilliant student who had come from Argentina, and you were part of the World Union for Progressive Judaism and the Sisterhoods, and you had a distinguished pulpit career as a student, and you could go anywhere and do anything. And what did you choose?
So I had a commitment with both the World Union and what was called the Sisterhood, an FTS at the time, that I would serve overseas after ordination in a way of repaying the scholarship that they had afforded me during the 4 years of rabbinic school. And I ended up starting my rabbinate in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, which had a couple of very positive things. Number one is I had a wonderful, wonderful mentor, a German immigrant rabbi who left Germany for England, Dr. Lemlet. He left Germany for England. In England, he ended at the Isle of Man because he was a German national, and German national Jews or not were suspected aliens. The World Union rescued him from the Isle of Man and sent him to Brazil to start his congregation in Rio de Janeiro. So I became his assistant rabbi. So that was the one thing that was good. He was a very formal German and very structured person, and I learned a lot from him during the 2 years I served as an assistant. And the second great thing that happened while I was in Brazil is I met my wife, Evelyn, with whom now, coming up next May, we will be celebrating 50 years of marriage.
Mazel tov, mazel tov.
So those are two great things that happened in Rio, other than other great experiences that enriched my rabbinate and taught me about my rabbinate forever. Then my father passed away in Argentina suddenly at age 55, as I mentioned before, and family things and World Union pressure made me move after my 2 years assistantship in Rio to Buenos Aires to take over a very small Reform synagogue that existed there, whose rabbi had decided to leave Argentina. He moved to the United States to become the interfaith director of the American Jewish Committee. And so I ended up at Temple Emmanuel in Buenos Aires, which was this very small congregation. I arrived in Buenos Aires shortly after Juan Perón had died, and his wife, his second wife, Isabel Perón, became president, a terrible president and a terrible time in Argentina. I came in the midst of that turmoil when people started to disappear in Argentina, and she was overthrown by a military regime which made things even worse. During the military regime, which extended to 1982, some 30,000 people disappeared from the face of the earth in Argentina, and I became very active in human rights activity. My congregation didn't fulfill me very much. It was small, and I wasn't interested in its growth, and I was more interested in human rights activities. Became the co-founder of the Permanent Assembly for Human Rights, and that's where most of my work was done during the years in Argentina.
Well, this is utterly fascinating, for that reason, the late and much lamented Executive Vice President of the Central Conference of American Rabbis, our rabbinic organization, called you in public the bravest man he ever met. And so we don't have time now to continue with Rabbi Gretz. I'm hoping that he'll come back again in the next coming months and be with us to tell us about the rest of his utterly fascinating career. So first of all, deepest thanks to my friends, my colleague, my distinguished, esteemed rabbinic colleague, Rabbi Roberto Gretz, for being with us today. Also, thanks to Doc Collins, who plays our theme song each and every week, and to the good folks at HealthyLife.net, Linda McKenzie, the visionary founder, and Jay Cruz, the extraordinary producer, who have made Spirit Talk Live part of the Healthy Life family for the last 15 and more years. I do have to announce, dear friends, that May will be my last program here after more than 15 years. I'm retiring from my pulpit. I'm retiring from this radio show with great gratitude, great regret, but great gratitude. And so if you want to catch the next few shows, please do March, April, and May. We'll be back next month, third Wednesday of the month. Until then, be good and do good. Be sweet and be holy. Tune your awareness to oneness consciousness, for in oneness consciousness, you are sourced to strive for the recognition and the reality of one God, one world, one people, the power and the promise of Eden on earth once again. That's why we invite you this month and every month to come on the journey, join in the quest. I'm Rabbi Wayne Dossick. This is Spirit Talk Live. Until next month,
Shalom, Salam, Pax, Peace.
In sacred literature and the Bible, God is known by many names. However, which name for God embodies the spiritual wholeness and essence of God? Discover The Real Name of God is a new book by Rabbi Wayne Dossick. He explores and finds the real name of God. Why is that important? Because the name of God unites all religions and is embedded within us. Get The Real Name of God at your favorite bookstore or online at Amazon.com. The ideas in this book can be world-changing. The Real Name of God by Rabbi Wayne Dossick.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic and expensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Rabbi Dr. Wayne Dossick is the award-winning author of 8 best-selling books. Living Judaism, The Complete Guide to Jewish Belief, Tradition, and Practice is now a classic, used in synagogues, churches, seminaries, and universities throughout the country as the basic introduction to Judaism text, and in homes as the perfect one-volume reference to Jewish faith and observance. 20-Minute Kabbalah, co-written with his wife Ellen Kaufman Dossick, uses Tree of Life mysticism to offer a daily personal spiritual practice that brings you to God, your soul knowing, and your heart's desires. The accompanying audio CD, angelically sung by cantor Kathy Robbins, guides you through all the sweet and holy chants. These and other fine books by Rabbi Dossick, including When Life Hurts and Soul Judaism, are available at Amazon.com. For more information about Indigo Children, visit the website www.soulbysoul.com. And for more information about Kabbalah, visit the website www.20minutekabbalah.com. Let Wayne Dossick's books expand your knowledge and enrich your life.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.